why the NAAL report is not useful in making meaningful improvements in aviation accident rates. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We have Bob on here almost every Monday to talk about safety issues that may be a lesson in someone else's unfortunate story from which we can learn. And today we're going to be talking about the NAAL report, which is issued annually by AOPA's Air Safety Foundation. Bob, thanks very much for joining us today.
Well, as always, Paul, it's my pleasure to be with you.
All right. Now, we've talked in the past about the NAAL report, and it gets a lot of credit outside the aviation industry for being a terrific resource. You're not so sure it's as valuable to us if the goal is to reduce the number of fatal accidents. Tell us why.
Well, if the goal is to, on the other hand, is to promote a positive image of general aviation to the general public and outside observers, it is a great tool because it does just that. But in terms of its usefulness in helping us to resolve our chronic fatal accident rate, I think it deserves a D-. And it's not altogether the NAAL report or AOPA's Air Safety Foundation's fault. The fault really goes back to the FAA's determination of how many actual flight hours occur each year. And that number, which is just that, an estimate based upon a 1% survey of pilots, is the denominator in any rate calculation, the number of fatal accidents per 100,000 hours flown, for example. We don't know how many hours are actually flown. Again, it's just an estimate.
And I would have to think that the people who would respond to a survey may have a different flying profile, a different level of activity in aviation than people who would not return a survey. I mean, this is kind of like the Nielsen boxes they used to put on top of your TV to measure TV ratings. And if you didn't watch at least a certain number of hours per week of TV, they wouldn't put a box in your house.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I think those that received the survey and are no longer flying or no longer actively flying may be the ones inclined not to return the survey. So those that do return the survey are those active, busy pilots. And as a result, if we just take the survey results alone, it gives you an artificially high estimate of the number of hours flown. But the fact that it is just an estimate allows us to reasonably conclude that the fatal accident rate is nothing other than an estimate. And when we discuss this a little bit further, we're going to find out how that can hurt us, because we can't begin to improve unless we know where we're at. And I think that's where the main problem lies.
Well, with all the intrusion that government makes into our lives in other industries, in other words, there is data collection done which some people just find onerous. Here is a very basic piece of data that needs to be collected to make any kind of meaningful improvement in safety, because you can't improve what you can't measure. Why is it that we don't do whatever we need to do to get this number?
Well, there's the naysayers believe, for example, that this may be an artificial intrusion or an onerous intrusion into the private affairs of us pilots. Well, we can collect the data very easily every time an airplane goes in for an annual inspection, have the inspector simply record the number of hours flown over the last reported period. That information, by the way, can be stripped of any pilot identifying information, just like the NASA forms that we use. We don't care what particular N number the airplane was. That's irrelevant. What we do care is how many hours did a Cessna 172 SP fly, or as a fleet, fly in the last 12 months. We can remove the violation of privacy rule by just stripping the identifying information. Others think that, well, because airplanes go in at different intervals, not every aircraft is inspected every 12 months. We have airplanes that go in for 100-hour inspections and are written up as annuals. But that's easily adjusted. We just simply have the inspector say, this aircraft flew this many hours over this reported period of time. And we can from that correct that to annualize the data, so there's nothing there. Some would say there's a cost factor associated with that, but you know, we're already spending money surveying pilots. We're surveying 1% of the pilot population, so we'll call it 400,000 pilots. We're surveying 4,000 pilots. There's certainly a cost to administering that, printing the forms, analyzing the data. So I don't know why we're reluctant to do that. It's perhaps it's just a change, and people are resistant to change.
Well, yeah, I guess to me the need to know this stuff overrides whatever hassle factor would be involved. But let's move on from getting the correct denominator to moving on to some of the other information we don't get, which you mentioned there's no type specific information available.
Well, no. All we know is GA aircraft, the estimate of what they've flown. But we have high wing versus low wing. We have glass composite versus metal aircraft. We have aging aircraft. We have light sport aircraft. We have home built aircraft. Home building, for example, has taken a terrible hit in the media of late because of even the Null Report is reporting a higher than acceptable, so to speak, accident rate among the home building community. Well, maybe the home builders are flying more than everybody else today. There's no way of knowing that using the estimates that we have. So if we could pinpoint the hours flown not only by the entire fleet, but tease that down to the make, model, and year of the aircraft, it would certainly have a huge effect on training. Because if we have a particular make, model, or class of aircraft that are suffering an actual higher accident rate based upon actual data, we can train to correct that. Right now, the FAA is involved in, Babbitt is involved in creating another task force, if you will, to look at the rules, finally, to address what is going on with the flight training community. But that's even a nonsensical exercise for reasons we've discussed moments ago. We don't know where we're at. Suppose we change some rules and then go 5 years from now and determine whether or not, or assess whether or not those rules had any effect. There's no way of telling unless we could get very specific, objective data based upon make, model, and type of aircraft.
Okay. Have you talked to an ANP about this? How do they feel about the idea of reporting these hours?
Not a real problem. It can be done. And we're all on the computer right now. Pilot, flight instructors, for example, we have to use the computer to fill out an 8610 for a recommendation for pilot rating. ANPs are on the computer right now every time they do an inspection to check NOTAMs, to check ADs. A very simple IACRA type of online program could be created where you simply enter the make, model, put the end number in, and that would be stripped along the way so that we have some control of, you know, what aircraft are being reported versus what aircraft are not being reported. My goodness, this effort alone, Paul, would have eliminated the need to re-register every aircraft that we're going through right now at some enormous cost. If we were registering the information online to the FAA every time we had 100 hours with correct ownership data, that whole re-registration process could have been eliminated. It could have been incorporated in this effort.
All right, Bob. Well, I guess we can't finish this conversation without talking about why AOPA and EAA and, you know, the other alphabet groups are not pushing for this.
Well, AOPA is a membership organization, as we both know, Paul. And the purpose of a membership organization is to protect the members, in the interests of the members, and they have traditionally, stood in the way of lots of changes until efficacy can be proved, until we can prove ahead of time that the change will have a desired effect. Well, this represents a change, and some members might object to it, and if AOPA supports it, then they're going against what their member views might consider to be appropriate. The FAA, at the FAA level, jobs are dependent within the FAA on the total number of hours flown in the fleet. If we are seriously over-reporting the number of hours and we knew the actual number of hours could be as much as 30% or 40% less than we're reporting right now, I suspect there would be cutbacks in federal funding of the FAA. And, of course, they don't want to see that either. So as long as we can wag the number, as long as we can estimate the number, then we're in control of our own destiny. We just estimate high, protect our jobs, protect our interests. But that's no way to run an airline, Paul. You know that. We need to have objective data. And if this means we have to pay a price, then let's pay the price. It could also indicate, lastly, and unfortunately, that general aviation is in far more serious trouble right now than we realize. If, in fact, we're flying only half as many hours as we're reporting, then the seriousness of the problem that we've all been talking about is even far greater. And that makes it even more compelling that we do something about it.
Well, Bob, we'll see if that gets some traction. I'm not sure who would have to lead that, because if the FAA really doesn't want to know and the membership organizations really don't want to know, I'm not sure we'll ever know. But we appreciate your making the point, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Bob Miller has been my guest. You can find Bob's newsletter and info about his flight school online at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.